Work changes over time. That's a fact of life and employment. My occupation did not exist when my grandparents were born, but jobs like steam locomotive engineer did. Workplaces will continue to evolve, creating new jobs for some people and tossing others out of work. The nonprofit called Working Nation tries to prepare people for a future with different and quite possibly fewer jobs. So here's our chance to talk about the recent past and future of occupations. From Working Nation, we welcome Joan Lynch, who's the Chief Content and Programming Officer. Joan, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
And Joan's on the phone from her office. Guy Tower is with us in the studio. He's an Oregon Employment Department economist based in Medford and often has lots of great facts and figures about work going on in our region. Guy, good to see you back in the exchange.
Good morning. Thanks for having me again.
Joan, let's start with you. Lay out the basics here. I mean, how many jobs people are working today do you think at Working Nation will disappear?
It's interesting because we like to reference some of the numbers that came out of an Oxford study a couple of years ago at Davos, that they're predicting that 47% of jobs will be gone within the next 20 years based on a lot of moving parts, but mainly technology and globalization and some others. So that's a pretty staggering number.
So 47% of jobs gone in 20 years, but gone and replaced by something else or just gone?
Gone and replaced by something else. That is the misconception. We at Working Nation are not trying to just scare everyone, but to let them know that there will be jobs. There will be a lot of jobs in areas like healthcare and others, but the skills that are necessary for the jobs of the future are different than the skills that we are used to in the last 20 years. And that's really a question of how we change both our education and what businesses, both local and corporate, large businesses do to prepare their current workforce as well as folks that are coming into the workforce.
So Working Nation is really just about making sure that the people who are working in the nation are ready for this future?
Yeah, what's unique about Working Nation is we were set up as a storytelling group, so which is very unique. We're a team of network journalists that were brought together by a venture capitalist, Art Bilger, who had a lot of interest in the fact that the future of work was changing and there wasn't enough conversation around it. So from doing documentaries that we released with CNN and documentary series with Time Inc. and PBS and town halls around the country, we approach this in a way that it's all about storytelling. And if you don't put a human face on it, the people really don't understand it. And it's just not enough to talk about jobs numbers, because even talking about jobs numbers is both confusing and conflicting based on what's really happening in this country.
Well, I want to turn to Guy Tower here in the studio with me. Just in your time as an economist with the Oregon Employment Department, I mean, how much has changed?
Well, quite a bit. The skill level needed for really occupations across the board has come up over time. So while we may call something the same as we called it 20 years ago, the skill and what those people do in their daily job has changed just dramatically, just with the advent of technology and automation and globalization. All those factors really require a higher level of skill, even across many occupations that you might even consider lower skill. Not all jobs have been affected by technology, but by and large, that's really been the biggest change, I would say, is just the increased in prevalence of computer skills, keyboarding skills, software, word processing, and things like that that maybe weren't as critical to perform many job functions as they are in today's workplace.
Computers are so ubiquitous now, though. It seems like anybody would probably arrive at a job at least knowing a little bit about how to operate one and some software as well. Beyond that, though, are there other skill requirements that have raised as well?
Well, I'd say more in the programming side, the software, being able to code and things like that. That seems to be really what's coming into the future, is people just needing those coding skills. There's a conference in Lisbon talking about the future of work, and Bill Gates talked about that it's critical to learn how to do computer coding for young people as it is to learn a second language. So some of those skills, being able to work with some of these advanced computers and robotics and automation. While technology, of course, eliminates a lot of jobs, it also creates a lot of jobs. So if you think back to 100 years ago, 99% of the people were working in agriculture. And when the horse and plow went away and was, tractors came up, all those people didn't find themselves unemployed. I mean, you think about all of the jobs that have changed over the last 20 years and, the fears of technology and automation of course, it has affected a lot of jobs. But with our unemployment rates, you know, now at really historically low levels, it's not that the automation and robotics and the change of work has created this huge sea of unemployed people out there in the workforce.
What was the percent in agriculture at its peak?
Around 99% of people
99.
Worked. 99,
okay. That was why I asked. I wanted to make sure I heard that right.
Yeah, maybe like 200 years ago. I mean, virtually everyone worked the land, and it's just has changed so much in a short time.
We're talking about the workplace and how we prepare for the future in the workplace. Guy Tower is an economist with the Oregon Employment Department based in Medford. Joan Lynch is with us from Working Nation, where she's the Chief Content and Programming Officer. What do you think? Has your job changed over the past 10 or 20 years? And if so, how? What kinds of skills do you need now that you didn't used to have, in addition to knowing how to operate the computer, perhaps? 800-838-3760 to talk with us on the exchange by phone, by email. It's jx@jeffnet.org. Joan, we're talking about more than just the kinds of jobs manufacturing, for example, is taken over by a robot. I mean, this is a really broad range of jobs we're looking at where people can be replaced by processes, by machines.
That's exactly right. And to add to it, we at Working Nation look at the four pillars in terms of technology, globalization, education, but one that is left out a lot is longevity, and people are living longer, which is a good thing. But as they are living longer, they also need care longer, or they're in the workplace longer. So you're talking about, I mentioned healthcare earlier, you're talking about areas of work where it isn't necessarily just about computer skills. There's, I think we've all talked about a lot, there's a change in the conversation around soft skills, collaboration, people being able to work together. We've seen that a lot in the last 3 years and in the stories that we're talking about. One of the more interesting things that we've found is that in talking about jobs in this country, there is a deep fear. People know that this is going on. And so folks are less likely to be vulnerable about either what they don't know or the challenges that they've come across. But in terms of going back to story, unless we can talk about mistakes and, you know, how to get things done, how do you get people to collaborate, local leaders and educators, to say, okay, this is changing. What do we need to change in order to support this?
And do you find that political local leaders and business leaders are prepared? I mean, are they a little bit behind the eight ball in knowing what's coming too?
I think we've found that it's a regional discussion. If you're willing to work across political lines. We at Working Nation don't see this as a Republican or a Democratic issue. We just see this as an American issue. And there's plenty of communities that we've gone into to highlight some of the solutions. We've also spent about 2 years in the Indianapolis area ever since the announcement was made at Carrier, sort of tracking what the process is for local leaders and workers and unions and others to see what type of collaboration is necessary, and also just to see that the language that is spoken on the workforce level versus the education level is just a different language. So how do we get folks to understand the issues and what opportunities they have? But I would say that this is the most interesting thing I've ever done in my career. It's also incredibly sad to see that there is a lot of unknown and a lot of people that are very, very frightened in this country right now. So we see it as a great opportunity to talk about some of these areas that are doing fantastic things. You mentioned agriculture, the wonderful company in the Central Valley. You know, you have generations of people that have had agriculture jobs, and now their children are coming out of school, and the jobs that were more hands-on in the ag world have become more of agriculture engineering. And so there's certain companies, like the Wonderful Company, that are working with local community colleges and trying to educate the folks coming up who might be taking their mother or their father's job, but it's a very different skill set.
Where is the biggest disconnect? When you talk about the people just not even speaking the same language, where is the biggest deficit, do you find? Which group?
I would say that we've gotten so used to talking about this, about jobs as, in terms of the numbers, and you know, we just mentioned the unemployment numbers, really getting folks to talk more about what's going on in terms of underemployment, people coming out of school with a lot of debt, as we know, and not having the ability to move directly into a job. We found some great programs in Kentucky and other places, where Kentucky in particular, Toyota is doing some fantastic things, but what they're doing is they're disrupting the process at this point and going into high schools and grabbing kids that would normally go into a four-year engineering degree and training them themselves. Now, we're certainly not in a position where we're saying that a four-year degree is not incredibly important and valuable. But, you know, how do we get community colleges, which often have a very low graduation rate, but in some places around this country are at the forefront of driving solutions because they're working directly with the employers and saying, what do you need? And we will train them. So I think just having a conversation about people and about different job opportunities without putting it back to numbers, because the jobs numbers, I think a lot of people, if you're in the middle class, lower income, you look at those numbers and you think that that is not representative of me or my family.
So, Guy Tara, let's bring them. I mean, we're going to go back to numbers here, obviously, but in the region that you cover in Southern Oregon, I mean, what's the story with let's deal with income primarily. I mean, how have income trends moved and changed, if at all, in the past, say, 20 years in the region, particularly as the timber industry has further contracted?
Yeah, I would certainly say there's been kind of a hollowing out of some of those middle-skilled jobs, those traditional jobs where you could go out of high school and get a job that's going to pay a middle-income wage. So a lot of those definitely have shrunk with the changes in technology. If you look at the output for example, in Oregon Mills, output has continued to rise. Output per worker has continued to rise because of productivity. And so some of those jobs have just disappeared because of automation. But certainly there's been kind of some winners and losers in this shakeout. More education, more skills have definitely benefited those people that are able to work into those higher skilled, higher wage jobs. Whereas certainly a lot of the jobs that people graduated from when I was in high school and, you know, be able to go out and earn enough money to support a family of four on one income straight out of high school, that hasn't happened. That's
something of the past.
Increasingly more rare.
So I mean, obviously some of these jobs we're talking about, and I do mention the timber industry because it's one of the bigger changes around the region. I mean, but jobs like millwrights still exist. But what's for example, a job category that might not have existed at all, say 20, 25 years ago, that is out there now?
Kind of moving to that call center model where people work in a call center and answer phones and do customer care and those sorts of things, business services. A lot of those jobs are kind of new. It's kind of a newfangled model of a company that does customer care for many different companies. And so that's one of the new ones, be able to have those customer service skills, be able to know the products and be able to help people either online or over the phone to deal with problems and issues that come along. So you may be helping someone from across the country working in a call center in Oregon somewhere and working for a company that may be located overseas.
Well, but then that does require some level of expertise and training. I mean, you have to know the stuff you're talking about to be able to help the people on the other end of the phone who are asking for help.
Absolutely.
So the timber industry, big shakeout. Where else have we noticed some major changes in employment in the region?
Well, certainly the demographics really drive a lot of the job changes. So healthcare and social assistance has really been the driver of the region's economy, I'd say, in the past 20 years.
As the average age of the population rises.
Right.
With a lot of retirees moving
and
in.
And growing population as well. And this area is really kind of a medical services hub. So we serve a much wider population than just the folks that live in the Rogue Valley. So transportation services, trucking companies, the movement of freight up and down. We're centrally located on I-5. A lot of growth in hospitality, tourism jobs. Retail trade's been strong, kind of a retail and service hub that serves a broader area here in Southern Oregon.
But not a lot of manufacturing, I'm hearing, in there.
It's been fairly stable. We had some recovery coming out of the Great Recession, and really the two strongest categories in manufacturing in the Rogue Valley. Wood products manufacturing is still the largest sector. Many people think that that's just fallen by the wayside, but it's still the largest employment sector in manufacturing in the Rogue Valley, as well as food manufacturing. That's kind of an up-and-coming category that's really increased its prominence in the Rogue Valley in the last 20 years.
We're talking about jobs in the present and future with Guy Tower, who's an Oregon Employment Department economist, and Joan Lynch, who's the Chief Content and Program Officer at Working Nation. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838 888-348-3760, by phone, by email. It's jx@jeffnet.org. So, Joan, you'd mentioned working in Indianapolis with Carrier. I wanted to ask about other venues at which Working Nation does its work. You mentioned it's mostly a storytelling thing. So what kinds of places do you go besides Carrier for the storytelling?
Yeah, we've been all over the country in the last 3 years. We spent some time up at Snap-on Tools. We have a short documentary series called Do Something Awesome. We joke that we don't do POCs, we do DSAs. And we highlight groups like Snap-on Tools that are looking at things like the car repair industry. And that's a perfect one to talk about as well, where there's going to be opportunity all around the country. And it, you know, a car, you know, in the 60s all the way through to the 90s had, you know, dozens of codes in it. And now it has thousands and thousands of codes in it. And there's 100,000 people a year that are retiring in that space. So there's a lot of opportunity. And that goes back for us in terms of storytelling to starting to talk about the value and the dignity of work and these jobs that are in the car industry or in the fixing of planes and updating of planes. These are really good jobs that are middle-class jobs that are just a different skill set than they were before. But our stories are all over the country, and we release them, like I said, with CNN and Time and others, just to let people know that there are opportunities. It's just looking at the skills and looking at the opportunities in a different way.
You know, I wonder about a future where if the income trends continue as they have, where people don't have as much money. I wonder about how much discussion there is with corporate bosses about if they continue to be able to shed jobs through efficiencies, you end up with potentially a poorer populace at some point, unable to buy the products that the corporations put out.
That's exactly right, and I would say, you know, we are still a consumer country, and if people can't buy the products, we use Starbucks as an example. It would be very easy to imagine going into your local Starbucks and having it completely automated. And although that might be a great thing for some of us to run in and put our finger down on a button and put in our credit card and get the exact right coffee, you're talking about over 100,000 jobs. So how do you as a corporation start to make the decision about what technology comes in and what you automate, but what do you do with your current workforce? Because at the end of the day, you still want someone that can buy a $5 cup of coffee. So we've found at Working Nation that there are some fantastic CEOs around the country that really recognize this. And they, you know, if things continue the way that they're going, and you look at the crash in terms of mortgages and all those things, and the bad guy being the banks in that case, you know, if things continue, then I think a lot of people will look at corporate America as the bad guy. But I will tell you, I'm very pleased and optimistic based on our conversations with CEOs at all levels around the country who do understand this and are looking for solutions to reskill their current workforce and to figure out how locally to train up the workforce that they're going to need in the future with perhaps different skills.
Guy Tower, I wonder, looking at the overall picture with employers and training, Rogue Community College, all the other factors that we have in place in Southern Oregon, as changes happen, if there's enough flexibility within the system, I mean, can RCC change its programs fast enough to train for new skills that are needed, that sort of thing?
Well, I don't want to speak for RCC because I don't represent them. But I'd say in general, I'd say this region has a great history of collaboration with folks such as Southern Oregon University and Rogue Community College and the K-12 folks all really at the table, kind of convening and talking about what employers need and how those education providers can meet those needs in the future. The Rogue Workforce Partnership is the local convening agency that tries to bring businesses and training providers and educators together to get those folks to sit around the table and try to speak a common language and talk about skill needs. There's some terrific programs here locally, for example, the Careers in Gear program that brings high school students together and meets with local employers so they can hear firsthand what types of skills and jobs in the future are going to be needed. So I think there are a lot of conversations and good examples of collaboration in this area to keep those conversations going and make sure people are speaking on the same language.
You know, there are things, too, that have come along that, that didn't used to exist. I mean, the whole wine industry is much bigger than it ever was. I mean, granted, it's also come somewhat at the expense of, you know, there's less of a pear industry than there was, but more of a wine industry. Has there been a net gain in jobs, or about the same or less?
Probably, I'd say a little bit less, just because of some efficiencies, and there are just less acres of wine grapes than there were, say, example, in pear grapes 30 or 40 years ago. Probably not as labor intensive, possibly. So the employment has come down a little bit in the agriculture side, but of course there are opportunities as well, the sales, the marketing, you know, the production, the viticultural side. So a lot of those new and emerging industries have really kept this area in generally an upward path outside of the Great Recession that we were hit pretty hard by. But increased population creates demand for more employment, and we're at really record levels of employment here in the Rogue Valley. Historically, you know, we're over 100,000 jobs just in Jackson County.
And what's the rate right now in Jackson County? Right around 4%?
The unemployment rate?
Yep.
About 5.2, seasonally adjusted.
Okay. So I want to ask a question of you, Joan, that appears actually at the Working Nation's website. Are there any robot-proof jobs? That's a great question.
Yes, there are. You can look to healthcare as one area that I mentioned earlier. There, the jobs that take that personal touch. One of the fastest growing areas in jobs is in home health care, which historically has been a fairly low paying job. Mm-hmm. Goes all the way back to Civil War and some situations where it was immigrants or minorities that were in those jobs. And some of those laws are currently changing, but areas where it is really hands-on and really personal is an area that I think is growing really quickly and has a lot of opportunity. Nursing as well is one that we highlight a lot.
All right, healthcare, big one for sure. Okay, well, obviously not we're going to solve all the problems of the employment future in one day, but got a good start in it. Joan Lynch is the Chief Content and Programming Officer at Working Nation. Guy Towers with the Oregon Employment Department. He's an economist in Medford. Thank you both for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.